Would you like to help out the Rufus Project? You see, we're getting very close to the limit of our free hosting, and in just a few more episodes, we either need to delete some, move some, or start paying. So we thought it was time to put ourselves out there a bit more. If you head to our website, therufusproject.podomatic.com, you will see tucked on the side there a donate button. Or alternatively, you can contact us at rufusreviews@gmail.com if you would like your product placement in this very section of the podcast. Anything we get above the amount required for hosting can go towards promotion and building of the podcast, and hopefully a few special rewards for those who give us a little extra support. Now on with the show. Hello and welcome to the Rufus Project, your fortnightly guide to geek, movie, and local entertainment and people news. Now when I say local, it's mainly in Brisbane, but hey, on the internet, we're all local. I'm your host, Trevor Holland, and a little later on, you'll be hearing from Brisbane's King of Retro Cinema, Christian Fletcher. And what a great show we've got in store for you. If you haven't heard the Rufus Project before, essentially it's divided into three sections. We start with the geek news and throw in a game or gadget review. We'll then move on to the movie section, where Christian is going to help us say farewell to a brilliant comedian. I'll be reviewing the latest Disney epic, Maleficent, before we move on to the redeeming features section, which I'll introduce to you guys a little bit later on. In the local wildlife section, we're going to be speaking to a couple of fantastic people who are doing great work raising money for the Cancer Council of Queensland in a quite impressive way. Then Christian will be back with a bit more information about events coming up around Brisbane. But that's not all. Keep listening, because we've also got stuff for you to win. So sit back and remember, if you've got a deep passion or interest for a particular subject, movie, whatever, you might just be a geek. Enjoy the show. Welcome to the geek news section of the Rufus Project. This is where we have a look at what's been grabbing our attention over the past couple of weeks, and generally I like to keep it pretty light and fluffy. First up, we have a little bit of upcoming movie news. Sony Pictures has announced that it will be launching a Sonic the Hedgehog movie, combining live action with animation. I'm going to call this now. This is going to be a travesty, and most likely a future redeeming features contender. The RIAA, or Recording Industry Association of America, is suffering massive drops in profit because the music creators of the music industry is finally realizing that they can make money from the internet without having to punish their own customers. Movie industry? I think you should start taking notice. Even after the IT pricing inquiry that occurred in Australia late last year, Choice magazine has come out saying that, yep, Aussie gamers and consumers are still being ripped off at the checkout when it comes to Australian pricing of entertainment and electronic goods. Well, some Australians are anyway, the rest are getting their stuff digitally or from overseas at a much cheaper price. We saw the trailer for Sin City, A Dame to Kill, which leaves us with the big question: do Bruce Willis and Jessica Alba ever actually age? Harrison Ford hurt his ankle on the set of the new Star Wars movie when, whilst reprising his role as Han Solo, one of the Millennium Falcon's doors fell on it. I suppose that proves the Millennium Falcon really does belong to Lando. And since I can't ever let the geek news go by without some mention of the current battle against piracy in Australia, oh, it just keeps getting worse. The CEO of Village Roadshow Australia, Graham Burke, has come out in agreement with our illustrious Attorney General that Australians are the worst pirates in the world, which I mentioned in the last podcast. You see, he's not very happy that one of Australia's biggest internet providers, iiNet, has come out in opposition to the proposed anti-piracy laws and is telling everyone to lobby their local member, whoever they can, protesting the proposals. Now, IINet, well, they're kind of like the folk heroes of the internet provider scene. They were one of the providers who stood up and started putting their own equipment in exchanges way, way back, which was one of the primary triggers for the gradual improvement of Australian internet standards. And also, they won a very big court case against Hollywood, where they were accused of encouraging their subscribers to pirate material. In the current environment, they are big champions of making content more accessible and more affordable for the Australian people, and how this will actually reduce piracy. But Graham Berg doesn't see it that way. Oh no, iNet is lying. That's right, iNet is just making stuff up by agreeing with Google and, you know, just having the comparison that Netflix is now taken the place of BitTorrent as the most used internet protocol in the US. Nope, that's all a load of cobblers. No, iNet is perfectly happy to keep profiting from piracy, even though it's got nothing to do with them, they just provide the service, and that they contribute nothing to Australians, except, you know, actually improving our internet. You know, every time piracy rears its head in Australia and things get a bit heated about it, there is always one complete lunatic that sticks his head up and decides to be the outspoken champion of all things for the movie industry. And I think Graham Burke is setting new standards in that role. I'm very excited to bring you the very first Rufus Project gadget review. As I mentioned in the last podcast, I've gotten my hands on a Google Chromecast. For those who don't know, the Chromecast is a small device that plugs into the HDMI port of your TV. It then ties into your home network to interact with your mobile devices or even your home computer. What this means is that you can then use either your mobile device or your computer as a remote control to stream, or cast in their parlance, media to the big screen TV. It's simple enough to do it from your computer. You just need to add the Chromecast plugin to the Chrome web browser, and pretty much you press the button and whatever tab you have in front of you shows up on your TV. This comes in handy for streaming stuff not yet supported officially via Chromecast app. ABC's iView platform is one that comes to mind, even though the ABC has promised that the iView app will be getting Chromecast support in the near future. But this isn't necessarily convenient if your computer is in one room and your TV is in another. Where it really shines is when you're using a Chromecast-enabled app. We don't have too many officially available in Australia at this stage, but the ones that we do have work well, and, well, if you can use the app normally, you can use the app on the Chromecast. Essentially, you press the Chromecast button on, say, your YouTube app, then browse and search and find stuff as normal, but when you press the play button, instead of appearing on your phone or tablet, it'll appear on the big screen. It's quite a smooth process. Platforms like Vivo and Pandora also have apps that you can use in Australia and work much the same way. Where it really shines though is if you have a lot of media on your PC. I have quite a flexible media server on my PC by the name of Plex, which I use to stream content from my PC via a PlayStation 3 to the big screen. Trouble is, for some reason, it often takes a long time for content to appear on the PlayStation 3 and I have a lot of timeouts. Luckily, Plex has an app on Android, which includes the Chromecast button. And the integration lets you bring up summaries, all sorts of things about the show or movie you're about to watch before you press that play button. Also got to admit, I find that the video quality via Chromecast, be it through Plex or YouTube or whatever, is actually of a better and smoother quality than it was on the PlayStation. Go figure. Beyond that, there's not that much officially available for Australians at the moment. As I mentioned before, ABC is promising that the iView app will get Chromecast support, and Foxtel has also said that their Foxtel Go app will also be getting Chromecast support. But of course that needs a Foxtel subscription, and if you have been listening, you've already heard what I think about that. Of course, if you're prepared to dig a bit deeper, do a bit of tinkering, and shall we say, bypass certain geographically based internet restrictions, it's not hard to get apps like Netflix and BBC iPlayer up and running, which also have that Chromecast support. Another way to add a bit more flexibility as to what you can view through Chromecast is to set up the remote desktop app on your tablet. Now, this interfaces with your PC, and, well, essentially that's what it does. It lets you bring up a remote version of your PC on your tablet. You can then browse through to Chrome, open up tabs, use the computer-based Chromecast from your tablet. This, however, isn't the most easy and smoothest of experiences. And again, I found that the video quality, I used iView and Hulu to test it out, was not quite as good, a bit stuttery. It was certainly watchable, but really for the effort involved, I'd probably only really recommend it if you're particularly desperate to get non-Chromecast supported content up on your big screen. Really, at the end of the day, Chromecast doesn't do anything new. Things like YouTube, Netflix, iView, Media Server, this can all be done through current devices like the PlayStation, like the Xbox, smart TVs. Okay, they can all do this stuff. What the Chromecast does, however, is give you a nice, cheap device. It's $49 in Australia, and it just does it better. Particularly if you have an older device around, you can get Chromecast apps on both iOS and Android. And we had an old Android phone lying around, so I actually rooted the phone, updated it to a more recent system, and I use that as a dedicated remote for the Chromecast. It is also getting more support all the time. Seriously, in the 2 weeks I've had it, if you go browsing for Chromecast-enabled apps, it's gone up from maybe a dozen or so to several pages. A lot of it is bloat, but hey, it's getting more support all the time. I mean, seriously, for the price, $49, it's hard not to recommend this device. The Google Chromecast is a small, simple device with a heck of a lot of flexibility. Highly recommended.
We received the sad news on the 9th of June 2014 that British comedy legend Rick Mayall has passed away. In our last podcast, we mentioned in the redeeming features section Shock Treatment, the 1981 cult movie that was the sequel to the Rocky Horror Picture Show. My best memory of Rick Mayall is actually by playing the role of Rest Home Ricky, the love interest of Little Nell, in the movie Shock Treatment. That was my first introduction to him, and then I since discovered him in The Young Ones and the iconic Drop Dead Fred. The Rick Mayall legend started in the mid-80s. You just need to go back to the university in 1976, where Rick met Ben Elton and Liz Mayer, who would go on to co-write Young Ones with Rick. Rick was one of the pioneers of the alternative comedy scene in the 80s, and a lot of comedians to this day have cited him as a major influence. He cut his teeth on the UK show The Comedy Store, where he created many lovable and infamous characters. It was during this time that he played Rest Home Ricky in Shock Treatment, as mentioned earlier. He then went on to have a bit role in American Werewolf in London in 1982, and then in that same year, he joined Comic Strip Presents. His work on the comic strip convinced BBC to take a chance on Young Ones, a show that Rick had written with his friends Ben and Lisa. The Young Ones went on to become a cult classic and ran from 1982 to 1984.
Well, there's a horrible farty smell in here, and it's definitely not from my bottom!
Rick followed this with a part in Blackadder alongside the legendary Rowan Atkinson, but it was probably Drop Dead Fred in 1993 which brought Rick Mayall to a new generation, and it's often cited as the movie or the thing that he was in that he's most remembered for.
Haven't got a husband, got a stupid haircut.
Whilst it got a lot of negative reviews, Drop Dead Fred was a huge success in Australia and really brought Rick to a whole new generation. And for a while, interestingly enough, Drop Dead Fred was the most successful independent film ever released in Australia. Funny story, I was in touch with Tony Fingleton a few years back when I was looking at putting a show on the Broadway stage. I found out that Tony, or Anthony Fingleton, had actually written and produced Drop Dead Fred, and he still spoke very highly of it, having made quite a success out of it. Interestingly, did you know that Rick Mayall was going to be the voice of Zazu, the bird in The Lion King? However, the part ended up going to Rowan Atkinson.
Honestly, I don't know why I bother sometimes. I don't know why you bother ever.
Right.
Well, well. I shall bestow a gift on the child.
Maleficent is a new Disney film that seems intent on following the trend lately of Disney wanting to tell different versions of older stories. This has been going on a bit longer than you think. Movies like Princess and the Frog and Tangled, I guess, got the ball rolling. And of course, Frozen, their last blockbuster success, did give us quite a good take on the Snow Queen. And this time around, we have Sleeping Beauty from the perspective of the Wicked Witch, with a particular focus on how she ended up that way. Now, I guess I should probably drop a slight spoiler warning. I will be talking about some events from the film, but only in perspective with stuff that you should already know from the story of Sleeping Beauty. If you don't know the story of Sleeping Beauty, then I suggest you quickly pull up Wikipedia on whatever device you're listening to this on. So what can you expect from this new take on an old story? Well, it doesn't take long for you to be introduced to the character of Maleficent herself. Initially played by Ella Purnell as young Maleficent, who is the biggest fairy in Fairytown, who grows up to be Angelina Jolie. And there is no denying that she is the star of this movie. She absolutely relished this role. And she is really putting everything she's got in there. And most of the time it works really, really well. This determined, completely in control character just oozes confidence with what she does and the choices she makes. Well, at least until we get to the Sleeping Beauty cursing scene where, well, let's face it, she chews the scenery like a madwoman.
Before the sun sets on her 16th birthday, she will fall into a sleep like death.
It really actually is quite spectacular to watch. The one who takes her from giant fairy to malevolent maleficence, wow, that's hard to say, is Sholto Copley as King Stefan. Now, I kind of feel sorry for old Sholto. He does the role well, and he has this most amazing Scottish accent throughout the movie. But after the initial setup of the character, well, let's just say from quite early in the piece, you're not going to find any reason to sympathise with his character.
Bring me her head.
Rounding out the main players is Elle Fanning as Aurora, also known as Sleeping Beauty herself. Yep, the princess who has the curse to fall asleep on her 16th birthday. Her very prim and proper, with just a hint of mischievousness, character is a reserved delight in a movie full of quite a few grand excesses.
I know you're there. Don't be afraid.
I am not afraid.
Then come out.
Then you'll be afraid.
In between the grandiose Maleficent and the stern and oh-so-serious King Stefan, she actually brings a bit of much-needed balance to the overall proceedings. Rounding out the supporting cast, we have Leslie Manville, Imelda Staunton, and Juno Temple as Flittle Knotgrass and Sistletwit, also known as the three fairy godmothers from the original Sleeping Beauty Disney movie. Here, however, they are bumbling, arguing airheads, charged with the care and protection of Aurora. Their complete inability to care for the child is actually what makes Maleficent step in and intervene to ensure that the child actually makes it to her fateful 16th birthday, which turns from an amusing diversion to quite a significant plot point. Also worthy of a mention is Sam Riley as Diavel, a raven rescued by Maleficent and given a human form in order to help her out with her watching over of the antics of King Stefan and the growing Aurora. He doesn't get to do a great deal of acting in the movie, but when he does have more than a couple of words to say, seriously, this guy is a real charmer and a delight to watch. The movie itself is spectacular, with magnificent scenery, incredible creature effects, and some truly spectacular action sequences. My main concern, though, is that this movie does get a bit dark. The scene in particular that turns Maleficent finally over to Wicked Witch mode is particularly dark and nasty. In fact, I did hear a few whispered, "Mummy, what happened to her?" throughout the theatre, and it would not be at all surprised if the mum themselves simply couldn't answer, were afraid to answer, or drove their children to tears by answering.
Curious little beastie.
This is not a movie for the littler kids. Not unless you want them having nightmares or bursting into tears or just generally being scared out of their wits. There are a few scenes that are, I guess, intended to be charming, but go on a bit longer than the charm lasts. And, okay, it may be a little too early to call this, but the breaking of the true love's kiss cliché is starting to be in danger of becoming the new cliché. Won't say anything more about that. This certainly is a movie also that boys and girls will find enjoyable. But again, the real little ones, maybe you should go take them to see something else, okay? While Maleficent may not be consistently magnificent, it certainly is not insignificant.
There is evil in this world. Hatred and revenge.
Those of you who may be new to the podcast, this is the Redeeming Features section. Here we take a look at infamously bad movies and see if there are, well, any redeeming features. Failing that, we'll at least try to find a few interesting reasons for you to watch these movies. So yep, we're trying to persuade you to watch bad movies. Gotta admit, this is probably one of the most challenging yet fun sections I find in the podcast. And for this episode, boy did I pick a doozy. Uwe Boll's classic, with a whole 2.8 rating on IMDb, Blood Rain. Now, I'm not here to give you a synopsis or a review, there's plenty of those around. No, I'm here to give you reasons to watch this turkey. Well, first up, in its rather bombastically scored opening credits, where you get to see names like Ben Kingsley, Michael Pear, even Michael Madsen, Michelle Rodriguez, and even the main character herself, Rain, played by Christina Loken.
I do not intend to stop fighting.
Who you may know as the female Terminator from Terminator 3. It makes special effort to point out that Billy Zane has a special guest appearance. Why Billy Zane gets special attention, I'm not sure. But it doesn't take long for your attention to be drawn away from that to probably one of the most defining features of Blood Rain. There are mullets. There are mullets everywhere. One of the main characters, Vladimir, played by Michael Madsen, has the most remarkable mullet I think I've seen for years. I think even when this movie was made back in 2005, it still would have been, my God, look at that mullet. I think the mullet should have got a special guest appearance tag, not Billy Zane. We are also introduced to the bad guy of the piece, Kagan, as mentioned before, played by Ben Kingsley. And I want to know how Ben Kingsley was not nominated for most wooden performance ever by an Academy Award-winning actor for his performance in this movie.
Prepare to witness the beginning of the new era.
If you want to see a textbook performance of an actor who is purely and wholly there for the paycheck, then check out Ben Kingsley in Blood Rain. Actually, as you keep watching it, it appears that a lot of the cast is just there for the paycheck, particularly Michael Madsen, with so many fractured sentences coming out from the depth of his mullet.
She could mean the end, the beginning of the world as we know it.
I think it's probably about time we talk about Rain herself. Now, being half vampire, she's actually burnt by water. Not holy water, any water. And the most interesting fact about this is that it also affects her clothes. There is one segment where she steps in some water and the heel of her sturdy high heel leather boot actually starts the water boiling. So there's something new for you. A damper's leather boot is also burnt by water. The other main female character, Catherine, played by Michelle Rodriguez, is a bit more fun. Seriously, Who could ever get tired of watching Michelle Rodriguez kick some ass? Not only does she get to show off her fighting moves in this movie, she also gets to show how she can kick the ass of an accent. She seems to want to hit this British accent, but she keeps missing, meaning her accent careens wildly back and forth, just always missing what she's aiming for. This is also a movie that introduced to me the concept of the misery off. We have Rain and Michael Madsen's offsider Sebastian.
What will make us think that you won't attack?
Comparing stories to see who deserves to be the saddest. However, there is no clear winner. Well, actually, if a misery off ended the way it did in this particular movie, I think I might be keen to do it a bit more often myself, considering it pretty much ends up with Sebastian and Rain banging each other enthusiastically for no reason. It just suddenly happens. I guess misery does like company. This is also a movie where the good guys decide to rescue Rain, and their plan puts them in the dungeon in no time flat. They seem to be hoping that they have an exceptionally stupid guard that they can trick. And sure enough, they have an outstandingly exceptional stupid guard that they can trick in order to escape their dungeon. And then it's Mullets to the rescue in the big final climactic fight scene, where Michael Madsen's already poor performance is even further elevated by him not reacting to having a sword coming through his chest. He gets stabbed, looks down, and is like, oh, look at that, before remembering to fall over. Now, I haven't mentioned quite yet that this is quite a bloody and violent movie. By the time you get to the end, you'll have sat through so many blood spurts that you probably won't want to put tomato sauce on anything for a week. So for some reason, they decide to give you a flashback reel of various fights throughout the movie. But these flashbacks are about 5 times as gory as what you've just sat through. There is no reason for it, and the sheer, unbelievable excessiveness of it will probably just leave you sitting there stunned, to be honest. But hey, I may not have convinced you so far, but I'm saving the best till last. Now, I've already mentioned the actors who tolerate their way through the movie, but they all pale into insignificance when all of a sudden Meatloaf appears as a super camp vampire draped by naked women who has people hung up on chains to have blood on tap. He seems to relish this role. It looks like he's really enjoying himself. And considering just how goddamn awful the rest of this movie is, it's almost like Meatloaf is a shining light in the darkness. So have I convinced you to give Blood Rain a go? If I have, please let me know in the comments, and I'd also be very interested in hearing what you think of me for talking you into it. Enjoy Blood Rain, if you can.
Blood Rain. The adventure begins.
Welcome to the local wildlife section. If you haven't heard the podcast before, this is where we get to talk to local people about local events and whatever else we feel is suitable at the time. We also love to feature people that are doing amazing things. Recently, I got to sit down with Scott and Sarah from the Steampunk Ghostbusters, and we had a great chat about steampunk, about Ghostbusters, and about the fantastic work they're doing raising money for the Cancer Council of Queensland. Now, there is a little bit of background noise in this one, so I do apologise for that, particularly for the lady who decided that she wanted to carry on a lengthy phone conversation just a couple of tables away from where we were sitting. So anyway, sit back and enjoy. I have the great pleasure to be speaking to Scott and Sarah from the Steampunk Ghostbusters group.
Hello.
And we're going to talk a bit about Steampunk Ghostbusters, and most importantly, the Steampunk Charity Ball. Scott, Sarah, welcome to the Rufus Project.
Thank you.
Excellent. Well, so first up, why don't you just tell us a little bit about yourselves and, I guess, what you normally do.
Okay, so, for pastime, we do steampunk. We like to dress up. I joined the Brisbane steampunk community a few years ago. I got involved through my husband at the time, Martin, And he and together Scott are kind of the founders of the steampunk movement, if you like,
in Brisbane.
Yeah. Maybe you want to say a little bit about how that steampunk got started in Brisbane.
Well, personally, I saw a picture online that said steampunk on the bottom of it. It quite infused me because it was a picture of Abraham Lincoln whose arm had been replaced with a Gatling gun.
Nice.
And I thought, I could do that. That would be a cool costume that no one's going to get at Supernova. So at the time, I think Martin, your husband, was dressing up a lot as a pirate. So he was very big into pirates at the time.
Yes, he was.
I had another friend, Colin, who had a kind of steampunk persona called Professor Von Explano. So Colin and I decided we'd do steampunk this one year at Supernova, and that was kind of cool. And then Martin thought, that's awesome, I can do that. So he joined us the next time. And it's kind of grown from there in Brisbane.
Yeah, and steampunk, I suppose, in a nutshell, is it's a take on what if the Victorian era would have evolved and stayed in the same way, would have evolved without electricity, but more around steam-powered technology. So lots of cogs and gears.
One of the terms that gets bandied about a lot about steampunk is called retrofuturism. Like, taking today's technology and backwards extrapolating it into brass and cogs and gears and steam, that sort of thing.
I got to see your outfits 2 weeks ago at Chanel of the steampunk Ghostbusters, and they were absolutely amazing.
Thank you.
So why the Ghostbusters?
Why not? No, look, okay, Ghostbusters has been, at least for me, a very, very formative pop culture experience. It's one of the first movies I ever remember actually wanting to go and see. And it was also the first soundtrack I ever bought on cassette tape. So it was the first album I ever owned was the Ghostbusters soundtrack. And I remember going to see the Ghostbusters at the drive-in at Harvey Bay, and they had four guys in council overalls in a station wagon with those backpack vacuum cleaners and badly screen-printed T-shirts waving to everybody as you drove into the drive-in. So yeah, it was kind of fun. So I've had a thing about Ghostbusters for quite some time. And when Matt Spoljarovic, who was the first of us in Brisbane, said, I need some more guys, I went, I could do that.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome.
And Matt, I suppose, got involved through his son, who is already involved with the Queensland Ghostbusters. So there's a Ghostbuster division up here as well, with costume.
Yes.
And he wanted to sort of get involved with that himself, but he didn't feel he wanted to go into Ghostbusters directly because he was a bit older. And so he decided, well, how can I take a different take on Ghostbusters? And he went, oh, I can do steampunk. Steampunk is quite the thing at the moment.
Yes.
Yeah, and so he created those gorgeous proton packs.
The packs are brilliant. He's such a good prop maker. If you're listening to this, Matt, you're a very good prop maker.
Hopefully he is. And seriously, look up Queensland Steampunk Ghostbusters on the internet. I'm sure there's plenty of photos floating around. It's really impressive.
And so one of the other things with that is we now have, we're the largest Ghostbusters regiment in Australia?
Yeah, I think that's actually
so
correct.
We're not even direct Ghostbusters, we've got more than anyone else.
Yeah, it's really gained a lot of momentum, especially with the ball. It's been a huge promotion. When we started the charity work last year at
Steamfest
in Ipswich, so it was a dedicated steampunk festival, a few thousand people, and we just decided, oh, well, we had a space that we could use at the booth, and we thought, oh, why don't we do photos with steampunk Ghostbusters and get people to make a gold coin donation. And so we contacted the Cancer Council, and they were very keen for us to give it a shot.
Yeah.
And we raised about five times as much as we hoped for. So
that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so from that, we kind of thought, well, what else can we do?
There you go. You have mentioned the ball there. So where did the idea of actually hosting a steampunk ball come into play?
That will probably be Matt.
Matt, yeah.
Yeah, so the idea is with steampunk, especially in Queensland, it's a very warm climate. So it's better to do steampunk in the winter. So Matt said, oh, well, we need a steampunk, some sort of event in the winter where we can dress up.
Yeah, we were originally just going to have like a picnic in the park. But it kind of evolved.
Yeah, so I thought, well, why not a fancy dress up? Why not a ball?
Yeah.
And why not try and raise some more money for it?
Yeah.
Especially because Steamfest is not going ahead this year.
Yep,
we knew we wouldn't have an opportunity there. So we were kind of trying to find another vessel for raising money. And we thought, well, if we go for a ball, it's a big scale. It might just work.
Yeah, and we have sold out.
Much
to the chagrin of some people on the page that got in just a little bit too late.
Mm-hmm. I did notice the ticket sold out, and congratulations on that, by the way. That's absolutely fantastic. Now, of course, it is for that great cause, Cancer Queensland, so if people have missed out, what would you suggest? What would you suggest they do if they want to contribute and help out a bit further?
We have a donation link on our page.
Yep. So on the charity page and also on the Steampunk Ghostbusters on the charity ball page, and also on the Ghostbusters page, we have links for direct donations to Cancer Council Queensland.
Yes.
So whatever, any donation, nothing's too small. We'd really appreciate it if people got behind the cause and contributed. That'd be great.
Yeah. And given that we've sold out this year, I think people should keep an eye on the page for when we do it next year.
Yep.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Oh, just quickly, do you know roughly how much you've raised for Cancer Queensland?
We expect from the ticket sales alone it should be somewhere around the 5,000 mark. And that doesn't include the charity auction that we're going to have on the night. So
And the photo booth.
Yes, and the photo booth. So again, there'll be a gold donation photo booth. We've had lots of exciting prizes at the auction come our way.
Abney Park, Professor Elemental, local retailers, Ipswich, Brisbane, Gold Coast. I think there's someone from the Gold Coast.
Yeah,
we've got someone. There's some other famous people. I don't know off the top of my head.
Yeah, basically we have a huge array of items that will be auctioned off, and they've all been generously donated for free. So anything we take from the auction is going to go 100% directly to the Cancer Council.
Excellent. And definitely look up the Steampunk Charity Board on Facebook, because pictures have been being posted of these amazing items that are being auctioned off. So if you're lucky enough to be going along, start your window shopping now.
Definitely.
Absolutely.
And bring cash.
Absolutely. Bring cash. We will not have FBOS on the night. So.
Okay, so you're going to have that photo booth as the Steampunk Ghostbusters?
Yes,
absolutely.
So those who can't come along and haven't had the fortune of being able to see these outfits and Queensland Ghostbusters, Steampunk Ghostbusters, do you have anything else coming up in the near future?
We generally attend Supernova. Fortunately, because it's someone else's event, we can't really race for charity there. Which is fair enough, because it's someone else's event. I don't think there's anything else we've got at the moment. Often we will attend the Steam Train Sundays from Roma Street, where they do Steam Train out to Ipswich and back, or not quite Ipswich and back.
In fact, we were there only just a few weeks ago.
The most recent?
Excellent. And I suppose to wrap it up, is there, just open it up, anything else you'd like to add?
Well, we're really excited to be hosting this, and just a reminder to everyone who is attending that the dress code is steampunk.
Oh, yes, steampunk.
It doesn't have to be formal ball wear steampunk. Anything steampunk goes, but it must be steampunk. That's the only thing. And if you're really stuck for anything, get onto the Steampunk Charity Ball Facebook page. There's lots of tips and tricks there on how you can easily create your steampunk look. Don't be afraid to experiment.
By all means, come as a steampunk ghost. If you wish, we will be the Steampunk Ghostbusters, so we'll probably chase you around. We would prefer if people come as steampunk or as a ghost, but not as Ghostbusters, because we are the Ghostbusters.
Fair enough.
Already the largest group in Australia, so can't take too many more people.
Not enough room in the car.
Yeah.
One of the other benefits of coming to the ball is you get a collectible badge, which is the symbol of the Steampunk Ghostbusters, which is the ghost in the cob. From what I understand from Matt, as we go down the track, each of the balls will have a different badge, which will become, once again, collectible. People love to collect stuff. And one of the things about Steampunk is the love badges.
Yeah, so it'll be the same logo. It'll just be a different finish every year.
Yep.
So this year we've worn for antique copper. Next year it'll be something else. And it'll also, the important thing is that the badge will also be your entry token for the night.
Yes.
So keep that handy.
Thank you so much for talking to the Rufus Project. Luckily, I've already got my ticket, which I feel very lucky to have.
Mm.
So I look forward to seeing you both at the ball.
You will indeed.
Thanks for talking to the Rufus Project.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now that winter's in full swing, so are my June events for 2014. Coming up on Wednesday the 25th, we have a special screening of Who Framed Roger Rabbit in memory of the late Bob Hoskins. That's happening at the New Globe Theatre on Wednesday the 25th of June at 6:30 p.m. If you're more into 80s and 90s music, how about heading along to the 80s and 90s film clip party on Friday the 27th of June, also at the New Globe Theatre. From 8 till midnight, see some of your favourite 80s and 90s film clips on the big screen and dance until you can't dance no more. On Sunday the 29th of June, there's two different 80s films that you can choose from. The Labyrinth, which is taking place at Chanel Theatre at UQ at 5:30, or the 80s Ozploitation horror classic Razorback is screening at New Globe Theatre on Sunday the 29th. Coming up in a few weeks, we have Kill Bill, The Crow, Amelie, Neverending Story, Lords of Salem, Zoolander, and Eraserhead. Get amongst this eclectic bunch of movies by heading to www.christianfletcher.com, where I list all of my upcoming events. I look forward to seeing you in a cinema very soon.
Yes, it's giveaway time. I'm afraid we've only got the one prize available this time around, but what a great prize it is. A double pass to the very special screening of Who Framed Roger Rabbit on the 25th of June at the New Globe Cinema in Fortitude Valley, Brisbane. Not only is this still a great movie to see on the big screen, it's also a nice, if slightly sad, farewell to the great Bob Hoskins. So for your chance to win, all you got to do is leave the comment Eddie on the Facebook page, on Twitter, on our YouTube page, or on the Podomatic page. Good luck! Thanks so much for listening to The Rufus Project. We hope you enjoyed this podcast as much as we enjoyed putting it together. We would love to hear from you. So please leave your comments, your feedback, your requests, your suggestions, pretty much whatever. Via Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, the Podomatic page, or even leave us a review on iTunes. All the links are in the description below. We'd also really love to hear from you if you think you or someone you know can be featured in the local wildlife section. So until next we meet, I couldn't think of a witty ending, so feel free to add your own. See you next time. So a half-human, half-vampire is called a damper. That just brings to me images of fresh bread cooked in a campfire.
Enjoy the fortnightly Rufus Project? Want to see this podcast continue? We're welcoming your donations and support. Please drop an email to rufusreviews@gmail.com for more information.